Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
A binge-worthy show about Jesus? The Chosen Season 3 is here. Come and see what the buzz is about. The Chosen explores the imperfect and messy relationships of real humans following Jesus. The first 6 episodes are available now. Stream each new episode for free. Plus, watch exclusive content like The After Show, only in the new Chosen app. Download the Chosen app on mobile and TV streaming devices. Visit BingeJesus.com to learn more.
Hey, MEAC fans,
it's time to step into a championship.
The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEAC action with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
Welcome to the Fantrax Toolshed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From dynasty to prospects to redraft, we got you covered. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clay.
All right, fantasy baseball fanatics around the world, welcome to the Toolshed. This is episode 106 of the Fantrax Toolshed with Clayton Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have a really fun episode in store today, a jam-packed episode at that. And with me, as always, my 80 great co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, what's going on, bud?
Oh, not too much. It's going to be a doozy of an episode. We got listener questions, a lot of spring training updates, and we're, a week out from the season starting?
Yes.
Crazy. It's crazy. It's almost here. You know, drafts are wrapping up, and we are going to hit the season hard. So I can't wait for that.
I am so ready. I don't know. This year feels like after the lockout. I don't know. I'm always amped up for the season, obviously, but it feels like a little more excitement this year. It's just ready to go. I took both Thursday and Friday off from my day job next week. Just gonna sit there, watch baseball the entire day. If my kids try to fight me for the TV, they will not win this fight. Usually I give in, but they will not win. It's opening day. It's going to be baseball for first pitch, which is, I don't know, I think around noon, I'm assuming. I haven't actually looked at the time, all the way through the night games. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And we finally have some real baseball to talk about here. A lot of fun storylines and players excelling or not excelling so far in spring training. Plus, a lot of listener questions, as Chris mentioned as well. So really jam-packed show. So let's get right into it. But first, let's get the usual housekeeping out of the way. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClay. I am at EricCross04. And our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. Check out our Patreon for extra content from both of us. And, of course, check out all the other great work we have on the Fantrax HQ network, including our 2022 draft kit. And I was just told tonight that the new draft room that we've kind of been teasing for a while is out. It is ready. It is done. So go check that out. It is phenomenal. So much functionality. It looks just sexy. It's a great, I liked our old draft room. It was a fine draft room, but they really went above and beyond, the Fantrax team did, with this new draft room. Like, Chris and I have had in several of our drafts so far that we were able to access it, and it is phenomenal. So go check that out. It's a lot of fun. But let's get right into it, Chris. So let's start with we'll do some listener questions after the break. We'll start with some spring training storylines. Let's start on a positive note here. Joe Adell just looks really damn good. Chris, you tweeted out the other day, and we were talking about this, I think before we came on one of our last episodes and started recording, but how much better Joe Adell's swing looks this year. Like, there was a video that the Angels posted from behind, but one of his home runs from about, 4 or 5 days ago, I think it was at this point. And just the difference, and then Chris, I think you did it side by side, the difference in his swing, from last year and in previous years to now, it is so much smoother, more direct to the ball, less noise, less, unnecessary movements, throughout. It looks really good. Obviously, it's spring training. We don't want to overreact too much, but so far through 10 games, he's hitting .280, only striking out under 25% of the time, 3 home runs and 3 steals. That's great to see. Obviously, spring training, but I just love to see that he is running. So this could be a nice little breakout year here for Joe Adell. And Chris, I know you put in when you were doing that piece with Fantasy Pros, where everybody was picking a breakout, I believe you put Joe Adell, didn't you?
Yep, sure did. I put my money where my mouth is too. I took him at 126 in the Highlander Dynasty. Obviously wanted to wait. There was a lot of good players on the board, but I think he's on the verge of a breakout. I really do. And when there's tangible change, it always means something to me. Not to mention the elite prospect pedigree, the strides he made last year. I mean, he increased his contact rate by 10%+. Zone contact rate was up as much as well. So he made tangible changes that now allow him to get even more contact, in my opinion. Like, his bat's just direct to the ball. So there's monster power. I think he chips in some speed as well. So, honestly, I'm not going to be surprised when he breaks out in a big way this year.
Now, we both use the term breakout. What do you think that looks like? I'm feeling, obviously, I'm still kind of down from where we kind of thought when he was like peak prospect. I don't have projections that high anymore, but I'm thinking something like 260, 30 home runs, maybe 10 steals is in play. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. I think that, I think 25 home runs is realistic. I don't see why he couldn't approach 30. And you're right. I think 10 steals is probably what we're looking at. We're not looking at an elite like 20 steal type guy, but a 260 average with that is pretty solid, in my opinion.
Yeah. So maybe, I think at one point we thought he was to be some 30 superstar hitting .280 first round talent. I don't think that's a bit too high at this point. That's very lofty from what we've seen from him over the last couple of years, but definitely still think he can be like a borderline top 50 overall player long-term. I think that's still in play.
Yep. I don't see why not. I'm really big fan of what he's done, and I certainly see him progressing, making strides. That lineup should be really good.
Yeah.
And as long as they stay healthy, he will be in it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I was just pulling up their roster resource page here. Roster resource has him hitting 7th. Who knows if that's going to be. They have Marsh hitting 6th, but in the platoon. So I can see him. I can see him being as high as 5th, maybe 6th or 7th to start the year. They have Max Stassi 5th, but he said he got a lot of RPI opportunities because that top 4 is Ohtani, Trout, Walsh, and Rendon. So he could, full season, if he does what we think he can, he might be flirting with 100 RBI as well, or at least 80 to 90 plus. So definitely like Adell here this year. Wish I had more shares than I do, but I do have a few shares, so I'll be happy with that for now, I guess. Moving over to, you know, the same town, well, technically different town, because I don't think the Angels are actually in Los Angeles, obviously, but still Los Angeles team, to the Dodgers, and someone, another outfielder that's not doing so well to start the year. And he's been, you know, a vocal point on Twitter. People are talking about him. People still, you know, he's very split on Twitter. People, some people are like way off, like me. Other people are still like, oh, you know, he's still a great player. So he's always a fun one to talk about. Obviously, it's Cody Bellinger. And we always say to not read too much into spring training stats. I said, it's, you know, we're talking like 10 games here, right? Like, we're talking 20, 25, 30 plate appearances at most. But sometimes you can read into spring training plate appearances, especially when we're talking about a player coming off one of the worst offensive seasons of the 21st century last year. Guy that's had many injuries over the last few years, and now through his first 25 plate appearances has 3 hits and a 68% strikeout rate. He has 1 walk to 17 Ks, and he's tinkering with his swing. I mean, I had him as like a borderline top 100 guy, Chris, coming into the year before we had any spring training games. I'm way down that. I'm trying not to overreact too much to this, but I wanted to see him at least be not this terrible early on. And in fact, he's already tinkering with his swing. That's very concerning to me.
Well, yeah, I think that's the most concerning thing, is he's changing it again. And the fact that he's really like has like 3 different approaches right now. I was reading up on it where he has like 3 different approaches. And basically, he's trying to see if he can catch the high fastball with his current swing. But if not, he's going to adjust to this. And if not, he's going to adjust to this, which is kind of crazy to me. And yeah, you talk about a bad season last year. He had a 48 WRC plus, a 237 WOBA. Like, those are horrific. I mean, yep. 165 batting average. And I get it. The BABIP was low, but his strikeout rate ballooned like the highest it had been since his rookie year. And, you know, in 2019 and 2020, he was at 16%, 17%, and up to 27. Like, that's kind of crazy. And the spring's not been encouraging at all. I don't know what he's doing, but he's completely lost. And the Dodgers are an elite team. They're not going to keep running him out there. Like,
yep.
If he's struggling this bad, they've got other options. Like, they're going to move on from him. I hate to say that, but I think it's wish casting at this point to say that he's going to be okay. Maybe he will. I know a lot of people are still saying they're buying the dip, but I'm out, man. I'm telling you, I don't want anything to do with him.
I don't either, dude. And that's a great point. The Dodgers are loaded, and they're going to be a contender. They always are. And if he's struggling, they're not going to, you know, they'll be quick. The leash is short here. Like, they'll be quick to tug him out of that lineup, or maybe put him in a platoon or something like that. But they have so many guys on the bench and coming up through the minors where they can, you know, they can put Lux out there. Like, they can do so many different things that they don't need Bellinger. Like, he's already supposed to hit like bottom third of the order, because that lineup is loaded top to bottom, obviously. Yeah, I don't know where I would even feel comfortable taking. Like, if I had a draft tonight, I don't know, 150, still no. 200, maybe. 200 is where I start to think about it at this point, but I don't know, man.
There's always going to be somebody in your league, though, that's way too high on him and get him
exactly
at pick 100. So your chances of getting him at a discount are pretty slim. Like, you're going to have to pay ADP, I think, even with the struggles.
Absolutely, you are. And I know there's plenty of people sitting there listening to our podcast right now that are saying, like, oh, well, he's been dealing with all these injuries the last couple of years. Yes, he has. But I think people just give him a free pass for that for some odd reason and they expect that, oh, he's going to be 100% healthy from here on out. That's just super risky. And you got to factor that in. Yeah, okay, some of the struggles could be attributed to injuries, sure. 100% agree with that, but not all. And you still got to affect, like, all right, durability is an issue at this point. Yeah. Like, that factors in. You got to play the games to accumulate the stats. It's that simple. So, yeah, there's so many red flags in terms of durability in the profile. I don't want any part to do with him in redraft or dynasty right now. It's at the point where I need him to show me something for me to even remotely buy back in. And he hasn't shown anything in a while. So, it take a lot to get me to buy back into Bellinger at this
point. He's a player you needed to see something from the spring and you haven't seen it all. I think it's a bad process to say that he's fine. Like, I'm not worried about this. Yeah, spring's training stats don't mean a ton, but just watch him. He's completely lost.
Yeah, it would be something if he was, you know, had three or four hits. He's hitting like, you know, 150, but like, I don't know, 25-30% K rate. No, this is a 68% K rate. 17 Ks and 25 plate appearances. That is terrible. So moving on, though, here to a couple other hitters that have struggled as well over the last couple of years, or excuse me, not two hitters, two players in general, one hitter, one pitcher that have struggled a lot since they got up to the major leagues, former top prospects, hasn't panned out, but both are showing something in spring training, unlike Cody Bellinger. Mitch Keller, Keston Hiura. Let's start with Mitch Keller, because he's been a very popular kind of conversation piece on Twitter over the last few days, because he is now through three spring training starts, 8 2/3 innings, allowed 7 hits, no runs, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. The velocity's been there. People have been gushing over the velocity. So people are like, oh, it's time to buy back yet on Keller. And I get it to a degree, because he has the former top prospect pedigree, even though I was never really a big Keller guy, even back when his prospect hype was probably the highest in, like, what, 2018, maybe that was? I can't remember at this point. But there's still a lot of issues with Mitch Keller, mainly the command, which is why I was never really as in on him as others were. And again, it's only 8 2/3 innings. I don't know. Where are you at on Keller? Are you kind of drinking that Kool-Aid, Chris, or are you still a bit wary of him?
No, I'm 100% in, because he made changes. He made grip changes with his pitches, and the results show. And, you know, when we saw that bullpen from Tread Athletics back in January, I mean, it was kind of like, well, he's just throwing a bullpen. Like, you know, the numbers are kind of inflated because it's a bullpen. And while, yeah, you can say that that's true, he's still been super elite, honestly. I mean, everything backs up what he did in that bullpen session. And I'm not worried about the command, because when you're throwing at 97, you can get away with more misses than you can if you're throwing at 93. So everything else just totally looks great. I mean, the swing and strike rate on all of his pitches has been through the roof this spring. The CSW in his last start was, you know, all right, so all pitches 36%, and four seam 45% CSW, slider 41%. The curve was down a little bit to 13, but 40% on the changeup. So everything looks great. He's keeping the ball on the ground at a high level, not allowing home runs, which is a big weakness for him, and he's striking guys out. Everything tangible is there. So, yes, I'm so bummed I didn't get him in the Highlander dynasty, honestly. I was holding out hope. When I took – I had to look back which pick it was. Let me see. Because I was debating – actually, so I took Jonathan Villar because I needed a middle infielder and some speed. I had middle and corner open, and he provides that. So I sat there and was like, shoot, I really wanted Hiura and Keller, which is funny. We've got them both. So I sat on it, and I was like, all right, I need Villar. And I really thought Keller was going to make it back. He made it within 3 picks of coming back to me. And I was like, man, I was so heartbroken. But, yeah, I think that Keller's going to be just outperform what everybody thinks. I think that crowd's pretty split on him right now. I don't think people are fully buying in. Some people are fully buying in, but I'm 100% in on Mitch Keller, because look at everything he's done, and it just really backs up what we saw in that bullpen, and he looks legit.
I guess I'll throw a little bit of cold water here, because yes, he made tangible changes 100%, and his velocity is up nearly, you know, but right around 2.5 miles, at least in his last start, which against my Red Sox, actually, he averaged 96.4. On the four seamer, it was 93.8 year before that. So 2.6 miles an hour up, sliders up 1.3. This is just from his last start. Curveball up 2.2, changeup up 2.8. But, you know, the changeup still is really not even a valid pitch for him at this point. He's never really had a changeup. He's always really been fastball, slider, curveball, which is fine. Two different breaking balls, you can get away with that. It's what, you know, McCullers kind of is that route, and Glasnow too. You don't need a changeup. So I'm not going to harp on that too much, but you know, you did mention like he's striking guys out. I was looking, he still only has, and again, this is just three games, 8 2/3 innings. I get it. But he has 7 strikeouts, 34 batters faced. That's a 20.6% K rate, which is still well below league average. So I'm glad he's only has 1 walk. That is very encouraging, though he does have 2 wild pitches for what that's worth. But again, that'll be the thing. Can he throw strikes, limit the walks, limit the home runs, which have all been issues for him? All three of those have been huge issues. And at the same time, can he do that without sacrificing the former, you know, strikeout upside that he showed? And he was never a huge K rate guy either, if I recall, in the minor leagues. So I don't know. I'm just wondering if he'll have to sacrifice that and be a lower K rate guy to not be terrible in the ratios. I wonder, like, is there that, you know, like we talked about with prospects, and, you know, can they just, you know, sacrifice power to get more contact or vice versa? Same thing with pitchers. Is he going to sacrifice some of the swing and miss stuff that he's had in the minor leagues with the curveball and the slider to be a guy that can, you know, hit his spots better and not give up so many home runs? I don't know. I'm waiting to see on Keller. I see why people are in. Totally get that. But I don't know. I'm more of a wait and see on Mitch Keller at this point.
I guess for me, it's because where he's valued right now, you don't lose anything by drafting him.
Oh, yeah,
or for trading for him, where he is. So he can only go up, and worst case, you drop him. But the stuff looks right now enticing enough that he can return top 50 value, which is crazy. Like, he can easily be a top 25 pitcher, in my opinion, with the stuff that he's shown. So I'll take the risk as late as he's going that he does that. And worst case, you drop him. I mean, he's still young. You mentioned the prospect pedigree. So he's one, you know, even before the offseason started, was one that you look at and he's like, man, there's some potential breakout here. And now you see he's starting to show that. He's just 25 years old. This seems like a prime post-hype breakout to me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree on, you know, the fact that his value is so low right now in terms of where he's being drafted and dynasty costs, all that. Totally agree with that. I guess I'll disagree with, I don't think he can get anywhere near that level of like top 25, top 50 pitcher. But we'll see. You know, he's very intriguing at the very least. It's worth a dice throw, you know, a dice throw. I'm combining a dart throw. There we go. I'm combining multiple terms here. Definitely worth a dart throw for sure, just to see if it, like I said, doesn't, if he stinks it up in April and May, you drop him. So moving on here to Keston Hiura, who, again, is looking very good this spring. And this is coming off, you know, so for Hiura's career, 241, 318, 455, which isn't, you know, terrible, but it's just gotten worse every single year. Average, 303, 212, 168. OBP, 368, 297, 256. Slug, 570, 410, 301. He was just unusable last year. You know, 77 strikeouts in 61 games. It's a hit 168, four home runs. But this year, in spring training, 8 games, 21 plate appearances. He's 7 for 17, 4 extra base hits, 3 home runs, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts. So still striking out close to 30% of the time, but he's looking pretty good. He's kind of revamped his swing a little bit as well. I don't know how much he plays, though, because there's a lot of infielders, a lot of mouths to feed in that Milwaukee infield right now. Like, for instance, you know, he right now he's projected to be in a platoon. They have 3 platoons listed on roster resource. And then you got Rowdy Tellez in there, Jace Peterson, Mike Brousseau, and obviously Colton Wong. Adames are the locked in starters, but the corners are probably looking like platoons at this point. So how much does he play? But again, what we've seen from him in the past is enough to, they at least, you know, same thing with Keller. It's a dart throw, it's a roll of the dice, late round flyer, you know, whatever term you want to use there. But I'm not fully out on Hiura like I am on others, but I think how much average we saw from him in the minor leagues, there's definitely a blend to be had, a balance to be had between that contact and power. The fact that he went through so many personal issues with his mother and whatnot. So I think I'm willing to see what he can do. Hopefully he gets a starting job. That's a big thing here. If he can play enough, maybe they put him in the outfield a little bit too, move him around, play multiple infield positions. But yeah, Hiura is at least interesting right now for sure.
Yeah, and he today he had a double too, only struck out once. So the strikeout rate is down from what we have seen in the past, which is good. I think it is worth looking at the quality of pitcher he's facing. But overall, just like Adele, he's made legit changes that I think really can stick with him. The playing time is a question mark for me, but I'm willing to bank on the talent. As I mentioned, I did draft him in the Highlander Dynasty pretty late. I got him in the 19th round, so I don't remember what pick that was, but 20 team league, almost near pick 400. So I think that we see him bounce back. You're right, the playing time's going to have to be there, but we've seen the contact rate be okay. The strikeout rate has gone down. If he keeps the strikeout rate below 30%, he's going to be okay. He's got like a Javi Baez-ish profile, which is fine. I mean, Baez gets away with it and has elite fantasy seasons every year. I wouldn't say elite, but, you know, really good fantasy seasons. Yeah. So I think we can see him bounce back. Another young player who has the skill set, the pedigree we've seen before, is now kind of putting things together. And wouldn't surprise me at all to see him have a really good year. And by good, even if he goes, even if he hits 250 and gives you 25 home runs and five steals, I'd say that's a step forward for here. And he's, like I said, still a younger player, former first round pick, all the pedigree in the world. Let's see it happen.
Yeah, I'm still I still want him to succeed. He looks like a likable dude. He's always smiling. He's a guy I want to succeed. So hopefully he can do that this year with Milwaukee. Like I said, everything is there for him to take that. And maybe he's not, you know, a great player, but you know, maybe he's a guy that could be a, you know, maybe a serviceable corner infield, middle infield, probably more of a corner infielder at this point. But never a guy that you're gonna have Price starting at, but a corner, starting corner infielder, I could totally see that at this point with him. So moving on here, Francisco Lindor is really looking good this spring. Now, he's a guy that had a very up and down last, you know, 2021 season. Month to month, it was just maddening if you rostered him last year. But overall, the numbers were still okay. 20 home runs, 10 steals, but .230 average and 524 plate appearances in his first season with the Mets, but did finish strong end of the season, still was walking a ton. So that's, you know, it's similar metrics to years past. And this year in 22 plate appearances this spring, hitting .474 with four home runs and two doubles, two walks to three strikeouts, no steals yet, hasn't even attempted the steal, but I'm not worried about that at all. But the fact that he's just looking really good this spring, and he'll be hitting in the middle of a pretty good New York Mets lineup, top to bottom, could be in, you know, could be in store for a nice bounce back year here in 2022.
Yeah, and he's one where, you know, you see that the prototypical thing when someone gets a huge contract and goes to a big city, there's a lot of pressure on him. So interestingly enough, he's not swinging at a lot of pitches this spring. He's been very passive. He just has a 38% swing rate, but the results have been there. He's been selective. It's paid off, and he's got a 13% strikeout rate, four home runs, as you mentioned, solid average near .500, the slugs through the roof. So everything you want to see. I don't know if we see him get back to that 20 steal type, but I don't think he has to with where he's being drafted. I think there's definitely 30 home run, 10 stolen bases in the profile. So where he's going, it seems like he could be a good value at shortstop, especially with so many of the high-end shortstops being pushed up. Lindor's kind of an afterthought. It seems like he's kind of flying under the radar here and having a really solid spring, honestly, with a lot of tangible change that we've seen, cutting down on the swing rate, et cetera, and it's paid off.
Yeah. How high do you think he can rise this year, Chris? Like, you look at some of the short, in terms of the shortstop position, you know, I think I obviously definitely behind Turner and Bo. Like, they're head and shoulders above the rest at this point, especially after Tatis's injury. But you look at that next tier, you know, in terms of ADP, where it's like Tim Anderson, Trevor Story, Semien, and it's Bogey, and then Lindor. I think you could see him realistically be the third most valuable shortstop this year if things break right for him.
Yeah, I could see him pushing top five. It's just so deep, and everybody at the top is so talented. So, you know, a lot of different things can happen, but you're right. I think the talent, we've seen him in the past produce those kind of numbers and be that high-end shortstop. So I don't think top five is out of the question for me.
Yeah, I think, you know, Trevor Story, obviously, I think is a great value. He'd probably be a number three for me over Anderson at this point. I think he's going to be an absolute beast in Fenway. Semien, I think, is fair value. Xander's right there, too. So, yeah, I think you definitely could see him finish ahead of Bogey, ahead of Semien, ahead of Anderson, maybe even ahead of Story. We'll see. But so, I think at this point, his ADP is right in the 55-ish range. I think for what he can bring to the table, even if he is only a 10 to 12 steal guy, but 25-plus home runs, I think the average will bounce back, OBP as well, good amount of counting stats to go with it. I think that's definitely a great value for Lindor this year. So you still get, it's got your draft upcoming here over the next week or so. You know, maybe give a Lindor a look in that, you know, 50 to 60 pick range. All right, next on the dock, a couple of pitchers here that are looking pretty good in spring training. One pretty young, one not so young, Jesus Luzardo and Justin Verlander. Luzardo is one we've obviously talked about several times this offseason at different points. And I think that we're both buying back in, and Luzardo is looking really, really good so far, as has Verlander. What are your thoughts on these two for this year, Chris? Like, how good, like, in terms of, like, the top X pitcher this year, like, how high do you think each of these guys could go at the end of the year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised by either, because we've seen this from both before, obviously, with Luzardo not at the big league level, but we saw flashes of it last year. Again, the velo being up is pretty significant. he's made a couple tweaks in the arsenal, like throw your best pitch the most often. That's what he's been doing, and it's really paid off for him. So Lizardo, I think, could easily be a top 25 pitcher this year. He's definitely got the pedigree, and we've seen him perform at that high level in the minor leagues. And with Verlander, I mean, he's shown that he can be the best pitcher in baseball. Even at 39 years old, he looks like he's still the guy ready to go out there and do his thing. So wouldn't surprise me at all if he's a top 10 or top 5 pitcher at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think, you know, people are reading too much into his age, honestly, because, yeah, he's old. I get it. He's pushing 40. Is he 40 now at this point? No. He's 39?
39. Yeah.
39. Okay. Still, that's very old, obviously. That number 40, people get scared by it. But Verlander showed, before, obviously, the missed season, showed no signs of slowing down. No signs whatsoever. They tell like Max Scherzer, where he's still elite into his late 40s. So, if anything, I think the year off might be good for him. No, there's not another year of wear and tear on that arm. He looks phenomenal this year. The velocity's there. The breaking stuff is there. You know, it's all there. So I could, and he's obviously on a great team as well. Yeah, I could easily see both these guys being top 25 arms, maybe even higher than that for winner. He could be top 10. I totally agree with that. So right now, like, I have over 75% of my league is this year. I have Jesus Lizardo. I'm just talking redraft leagues. I don't know what it is in dynasty leagues, but I have a few shares of him in dynasty leagues as well. He's my highest rostered player by a significant margin. I have nobody else over 50%. He's up like 78% or whatever it is, something ridiculous. I'm trying to get him everywhere. The ADP has risen over the last few, you know, 3-4 weeks, as I thought it would when we saw him, you know, get in camp and get in the game action here. It looks pretty good. So it's kind of jumped from like 300-ish to more like 230, 250 at this point. But yeah, both these guys are great targets and looking very good so far in spring training. Moving on, a couple closer situations have kind of come to light here over the last few days. Out in the Bay Area with the Dodgers and the Giants, Gabe Kapler pretty much saying that Jake McGee is going to be the guy at least to start the year. So everybody that drafted Camilo Doval, that's something we talked about too, with I think both George Montanez back in like October or whatever, and then with the reliever recon guys that, yeah, Doval is the sexy pick there in that bullpen. McGee is far from a sexy pick, but, you know, McGee is the guy that has the experience and Kapler likes him, so he'll get the save opportunity to start the year. And then with the Dodgers, you know, they didn't say, you know, this guy is the closer over Blake Treinen, but it's going to be, I think, a mixture of guys. You know, Daniel Hudson, Blake Treinen, Bruce Zagradarol, so it's not going to just be Treinen. I think he'll probably still lead the bullpen in saves by the, you know, venture a guess, but I don't think he's maybe not going to get that 25 to 30 that we are hoping for and just take, you know, step in for Jansen. So, yeah, definitely big blows to people that had Treinen shares and Doval shares. And I had a lot of Treinen shares. I was really sipping that Kool-Aid. So, yeah, really tough to hear that, but not surprising at all.
I mean, I'm not upset. I'm not even worried about it particularly because the ratios are so good. I think he still gets 15 saves. You're looking at a team that's going to win 110 games. Got to imagine that he still probably sneaks 15 to 20 saves.
Yeah.
Daniel Hudson has been quoted saying that he doesn't like closing either. So somebody's got to do the darn job for them. Apparently no one wants to close. Your best pitcher, obviously it doesn't close in every situation, but Blake Treinen's by far the best pitcher in that bullpen.
Agreed.
And I think it's going to play out where he gets the majority of saves. I'm not really buying it fully right now. He may not come out and get the first save of the year, but I really don't see a situation where he doesn't get the majority of the saves there. So I'm not really concerned about it. Doval, I haven't drafted once. That was the easiest pass there was in drafts with how high he was going. And we talked about it. We've talked about it on the reliever episode here. You know, we've talked about it multiple times where look at Gabe Kapler. For one, he's hardly ever committed to a closer. He was last year more than ever. But who was his guy? It was Jake McGee. And guess what? Jake McGee is back. He was with the team again. So why wouldn't he go with that guy again? Doval, you know, has been solid. But again, McGee has a track record. We saw him get the majority of saves last year, so I'm not surprised to see that at all.
Agreed. All right, let's talk a little bit of some prospects here in spring training. A lot of prospects really balling out this year. I put a tweet out earlier. All the top Kansas City guys are all hitting well. Prado is still striking out a bit too much, but Witt looks really good. Looks like he's in line to start at third base. Bryson Stott looks like he's in line to start at third base for Philly. That'll be great because I took both of them in the Highlander Dynasty draft. Witt, my first round pick at 16 overall, and Stott was
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Somewhere in the 250 range, if I had to guess. But if I can get dual eligibility from both of those guys, shortstop and third base, that'd be great because I kind of waited on third base. So hopefully I'll get third base eligibility from one of those two early in the season. And both of them are great. Obviously, we know. But Stott's just a phenomenal target because – I can see him working his way. Maybe he doesn't hit high initially, but his OBP skills would just be wasted in the bottom third of the order. And obviously they're loaded with adding Castellanos and Kyle Schwarber, but I can see him moving his way up that lineup slowly but surely. Very solid five category guy. So definitely love him as a, you know, mid to late run target this year. And, you know, the other one that's, you know, talking a couple of prospects that, recently, today even, got either sent up or called down, or sent down or called up. I got that backwards. Hunter Green's going to start the year in the rotation for Cincinnati. Fourth game of the year, he'll be starting. So that's phenomenal. Love to see that. O'Neill Cruz was sent down the other day to work on his outfield defense, which is just complete crap. But I don't know, Chris. A lot of stuff here. So what are your general thoughts and everything for prospects in spring training?
Yeah, I mean, they've looked good for the majority. I mean, you look – I think there's a real possibility Julio Rodriguez makes the roster. I feel like it's a lock that Bobby Witt makes the roster. Torkelson and Riley Green, I think they make it too. So this is going to be an interesting but good change that we haven't seen as much in the past. I mean, O'Neill Cruz, you hate it, but not surprising at all that the Pirates did this. Props to the Reds, though. I mean, they're a non-contending team. They've traded off everybody. So maybe that's why Green is up, because they don't have anybody else left to pitch. But Green definitely deserves it. He's more than ready. Kind of said all along that Green would get probably 10 more starts than Lodolo this year, just because he's more seasoned in AAA. Yeah. And now we're seeing that come to fruition. So, you know, I'm not surprised that this is how it's playing out. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to Green. I still think Cruz gets his fair share of playing time, but maybe 400 plate appearances versus, you know, 600 like we thought. So he'll still get plenty of run this year, and he'll be a really solid player.
Yeah, that was one of the listener questions we had later on. I guess we can listen just now. Someone's asking, what is the ETA on O'Neill Cruz? It's going to be early. Like, if he's not back up by the end of May, I would be shocked. It's probably much sooner than that. So, yeah, I still think definitely 400-plus, maybe even still 500-plus. You know, it's the whole work on this defense crap that we've seen in the past with Chris Bryant and others. So, he's still going to be up. He's one of the most talented hitters in that lineup already. We saw that last year. Couple of weeks or a month at AAA of him performing well, he'll be back up. Don't worry about that. It's hard to roster him when you're standard 12 teamers. I don't know. If you want to use a bench spot, I wouldn't be against it in 12 teamers with, you know, a standard size bench, just 6-7 guys, but it's kind of hard to do so. But if you drop him, just be kind of looking to see, you know, be on top of when he might be back up so you can pick him up a week before, or else you'll probably not get him when he comes back up. That's for sure. You really think J-Rod breaks camp, though? I'm so on the fence with if J-Rod breaks camp. And he's been looking solid in spring training. You know, he had an absolute bomb the other day. Home run, two steals, hitting 316, 381, 579. But I don't know. I feel like they still give him like a month or two in AAA. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, he's ready. I think there's no question about that. He's good enough to play with the big boys. So it's up to the team at the end of the day. But, you know, you look and – I mean, Juan Soto played way less in AA than he has, so wouldn't be surprised, but also wouldn't be surprised if they sent him down either. But he's more than ready. I think that we're looking at a generational-type talent that's just ready to step in and play. So I don't know. I think that he could, but I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't make the team.
I think he definitely could. With Soto, though, like it was because they had nobody else. I remember they had all those injuries, so they kind of had to. Seattle, that's the thing. Like, if they were, like, really barren in the outfield, I would totally see it. But they have so many guys in that outfield already that, I don't know. But for what it's worth, Ross Resource does have him as a starting center fielder with Kelenic in left and Mitch Haniger in right, Winker DHing. We'll see. I don't know. I think it's definitely possible. Like, I'm totally not ruling it out.
Yeah.
And Lewis is still, you know, coming off knee surgery, so he's not ready for start of the year. I could totally see it. And while we're talking about Seattle here, we could see Matt Brash as the number five starter there. So someone asked me, was it today or yesterday on Twitter, who would you rather have right now between Matt Brash and Mackenzie Gore? And I said Matt Brash. I said it was close, but I think I said Matt Brash. And I was like, man, if you would ask me this question, or you told me 2 years ago, that in, you know, near 2022 opening day, I'd be taking Matt Brash over Mackenzie Gore, I would have looked at you like you had six heads. Like, it's just it just shows how difficult this game is and how much values can change very quickly, where you go from Gore was the unquestioned number one, and at that time, nobody even really knew who the heck Matt Brash was. And now he's the hot name rising up rankings, and Gore's kind of the guy people are cautious to even go near in redraft or dynasty. But Gore, he could be a rotation back at, you know, number five guy for San Diego too. So he's got some intrigue if he gets that rotation spot too.
Yeah, there's definitely intrigue for Brash, for Gore. These dudes have looked really good, and I'm kind of believing that Brash takes the job and runs with it. A lot of people are skeptical, but I mean, the stuff is just unreal, and the stuff's going to play, in my opinion.
Yeah, at least he's going to be a big strikeout source. And if he can really continue to improve, he's already made gains with the changeup, with his overall command and strike throwing. If that continues to, you know, take a step forward like it has in 2021, yeah, you could definitely see Brash take that next step. And I think, you know, I still think he's more of like a mid-rotation guy, but a very intriguing mid-rotation guy, that's for sure. And that Seattle rotation is going to be pretty damn good. Like, they already get Robbie Ray at the top, Logan Gilbert. They'll be adding Matt Brash. They'll be adding George Kirby sometime midseason. They still have, you know, Hancock waiting in the wings, Marco Gonzalez and Flexen kind of just holding it together, the kind of the glue guys there that can just give you innings. So that's a very good, I think this would be a very good team. I think they could be a postseason team. I'm sure we'll do our, you know, prediction thing probably on Patreon for the season, but I think Seattle's a postseason team this year. I really do. They're good offensively and on the mound, and they have one of the best bullpens in baseball too. So it'd be a really fun team. If you're a Seattle fan, it'd be a pretty fun year. All right.
Yeah, agree.
Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back on the other side and get into all the listener questions. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship.
The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEACtion with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
All right, welcome back from the break. Let's get into some listener questions now. We got a lot of them, so we will try to get through as many as we can. If we don't get to yours, we will still answer it on Twitter, so don't you worry. Thank you to everyone that submitted questions. A lot of fun ones here. Some dynasty ones, prospect, redraft, good mix here. Let's start with Fernando Tatis Jr. Someone asked, if Tatis comes back and rakes for the second half, would you consider selling high? Do you think we can put the injury-prone tag on him, or do you think the injuries have been fluky? Now, I mentioned this, I think, last episode in our Dynasty Crystal Ball, that I think I'm not ready to put the tag on him, but I got the tag ready at this point because I hate to say it, but this is a trend here already, and I don't think they're really – maybe the motorcycle could be considered fluky, but there's been a lot of injuries, a lot of different injuries, so I am at least worried that injury-prone is going to start creeping in, so I would not be opposed to selling high once – not now – but once he comes back, if he rakes like this person asked, I wouldn't be, you know, obviously you have to get a great return to trade a guy like Tatis, but I would not be opposed to it, honestly. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, if he comes back and he rakes, obviously everybody's going to be right back in on him. So you could get a great return. I mean, he's still fetching great returns that I've seen right now. Yeah. So I am slightly concerned. I do really wish that he would have gotten – surgery on the shoulder as well, because that still lingers and scares me. So I am not opposed to that if you get a elite player, because I think you can still get a top five player for him, especially if he comes back and performs at a high level. I think it's pretty easy to say I would take him.
So let's say that happens, Chris, and you have Tatis and Dynasty. Someone offers you Bo Bichette. You take it?
I think it's fair. I'd much rather have Acuña or Soto type, but
right.
I think I would. I do think I would take that.
That was the first thing that kind of popped in my mind. Like I got it's like what, fifth, right in the middle of that top 10.
Yeah.
What about like a Vladdy Jr.? Let's say it's OBP. Someone offers you Vlad Jr. You taking it?
Yeah, that's pretty easy in my opinion. Okay.
Yeah, I think I would too at this point. Obviously, you know, on talent alone, it's 1A, 1B, him and Acuña. But even Acuña's, you know, he's obviously not, hasn't had as many injuries as Tatis. But yeah, Tatis is really worrying me that it's maybe another Byron Buxton situation, which I mentioned last episode. So I definitely am concerned. So I would not be opposed to that for sure. All right, next question here from our buddy Christian Crespo, who we had on a few weeks back, a month ago. I can't remember at this point. It's all a blur this time of year. He said, who will be the number one prospect in baseball at midseason? All right, I have a definitive answer to this. Is obviously, I think at this point, we're assuming that Witt graduates, that Rodriguez graduates, that both the Detroit guys graduate, the Adley guys like that. So I'm taking all of them off the list.
Yeah, I know who you're going with.
I'm going Anthony Volpe.
Yep, I figured.
And it's funny because my last update a couple weeks ago, I had Volpe fifth. I had Riley Green fourth and Noelvi Marte third. And obviously the big guys at number one, too. And I was asking myself the other day, why do I have him fifth? I think overall, like obviously Green is closer by about a year, but I think there's a better hit tool with Volpe. I think there's more speed with Volpe. And I think the power isn't far off. So I'm wondering, why do I have Green ahead? Is that proximity worth that much? And then I was with Noelvi Marte, who I've always loved. People know that. I was on him back when he was not even top 100. You know, I think there's more power with Marte, but hit tool and speed solidly to Volpe. So I'm wondering, like, I might move him up to three right now. And then number one when those two guys graduate. So, yeah, it's Volpe for me. He's the entire package, 25-25 type of guy, high average, high OBP, high floor, Yankees lineup, Yankee Stadium, a lot of good in that profile. So yeah, I'll go Volpe.
Yeah, I'm going with Corbin Carroll. I think the floor is even higher there, and I just feel like it's a safer profile. I do love Volpe, but Carroll to me, if he hadn't been injured all last year, I think may already be in that conversation. So
totally agree.
I think we'll see Carroll make that huge leap this year. Man, beautiful swing. The contact skills are through the roof. Elite speed and enough power to play up. So I'll go with Corbin Carroll.
It's going to be a really interesting conversation if you know we get Volpe, if Carroll's power progresses, Abrams, if the same thing with Abrams, if the power progresses. There's a lot of good guys in that conversation. So there's not going to be like a clear-cut top two like we have now. It's going to be like this group of like four or five that are just really, really good. So yeah, really fun conversation for sure. Next question we have here. Does Christian Hernandez of the Cubs have top five prospect potential? Top five is really lofty. I think he does. Are you talking about pure ceiling, Chris? I think he might be in that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, he really stood himself out from that international class last year and was dominant when he played. And I think that the best is still yet to come. I think there's still plenty of frame to fill out there. So yeah, I think top 10 is reasonable this time next year, and top five is a possibility. Obviously, a lot has to go right for you to be a top five prospect, but the skill set is there.
Yeah, I think you could see a guy that's an above average or better hitter, plus or better power, solid speed, maybe still a double-digit speed guy as he fills up the frame. So, yeah, it definitely could be there for sure. I love Christian Hernandez. Go out and get him. I think this time next year, the price is going to be so much higher in Dynasty Leagues. A couple of Yuri Perez questions here. So Craig grouped these two together. With all the helium Yuri Perez is seeing, I would love to hear a quick breakdown / debate on him versus Jack Leiter. And the other question was, would you take Yuri Perez first overall in a Dynasty FYPD? First off, I got Daniel Espino like three rounds after Yuri Perez, which I thought was ridiculous.
Yeah, that's silly.
That is no knock to Yuri Perez, though. He is obviously incredibly talented, 6'8", upper, can touch upper 90s, got the big breaking ball, was one of the most dominant pitchers in baseball at any level last year. So I totally get it. And he's super high in my rankings as well. But I wonder, is the hype out of control at this point, Chris? Like, is the hype too much?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So it's highly possible that you can sell high and get something crazy for him, in my opinion. So don't be surprised if he does tail off a little bit. Like, he's going to have some struggles at some point. And I don't think people are quite ready to hear that. But I do definitely like sell high in Yuri Perez's case. I think he's great, but I'm fine selling high if you can get a great return on him.
I am too. I'm trying to find, someone asked me recently, it was a trade question involving Yuri Perez. Oh, right here. Okay. So this was, yesterday at 29. Someone asked me, they said, I was offered any one pitcher of Cavalli, Taj Bradley, and Ashby, and any one hitter of Luis Matos and Marcelo Mayer for a Yuri and Dynasty. Any combo worth it? And I was like, absolutely. Take Matos and Ashby and run to the hills. Like, I think that just shows, like, I mean, that's not a thing that's the person asking, obviously, but I was just using that to show that the hype on Yuri is out of control. That people are, like, wondering, should I not do this? Where I have Matos top 15. He could be top 10 if this top 10 wasn't so damn loaded right now. Right. Ashby could be a top 30 arm this year. Bradley's a top 100 overall prospect. Cavalli's top 60. Like, absolutely. I would take Matos for Yuri straight up and then throw in Ashby or Cavalli or Taj Bradley. Absolutely. So, yeah, this could be the time to at least entertain and, you know, throw it out in your league chat or trade block, see what you get for offers. Obviously, don't take a, you know, get a good return, but yeah, the price is just ridiculous. In terms of FYPD, no. I'm not sure if he's talking about 2021 or 2022 at this point, but 2021, I'm still taking, you know, all those prep shortstops we've talked about, or Saya Suzuki or Jack Leiter over Yuri Perez, who I still take Leiter over Perez right now. Maybe slight ceiling could go to Yuri Perez a little more than Leiter, but Leiter's ceiling is still incredibly high, much higher floor at this point in time. So I'm still definitely on the Leiter side. That could change. You know, Yuri's on the upward trajectory, so that could change for sure. But I'd rather have Jack Leiter at this point. Are you Leiter as well, Chris?
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Moving on here. So past the Yuri questions. Next one. Last episode, you talked about Miguel Vargas as one of your most underrated prospects. Why do you think someone like Vargas gets overlooked? Are there any other prospects that you think are similarly underrated by other rankers? I'll let you go ahead, Chris. Chris, if you remember, ranked Vargas, was at number 2 at third base in 5 years out, which I like. I love Miguel Vargas. I tweeted about it, you know, the other day as well. Yeah, Vargas is definitely underrated. But Chris, I'll let you take this one. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the combo of contact skills and the power that developed this year, and that's kind of what we were waiting on, was the power to come, and it came. And the contact skills are through the roof. He's going to hit for a good average. Like, you're looking at a potential player that can hit 290 or better, and now we've seen the home run skills or the power come where there's enough power to easily hit 25 home runs. He's going to chip in some steals, and I just think that he's still, you know, way, way, way too under the radar right now. And you can get him cheap. And I'm not surprised that if I said he'll graduate a top 10 prospect. And somebody said, well, he doesn't have playing time, but he's the heir apparent to Justin Turner at third base. They have a vesting option on Turner. So it'll be interesting to see, like, how much they're willing to invest in him this year to see if they want to vest that contract for next year. And my take is that they're not. The Dodgers are known to go out and get who they want, so they could easily go buy somebody. But when you have a player as good as Vargas in the wings, I think that he's ready, and I think we'll see him get a chance at some point this year.
Agreed. And to kind of answer the question, I think it's just, if I could do it, paint that with a general brush to this answer, the prospects that don't have either huge power, huge speed, or a great combination of both are often the guys that get overlooked. Even a guy like Vargas, who has been 300-plus everywhere, easy-plus hit tool, and has shown more power over the last couple of years, 25 to 30 homer bat, the guy that can add around 10 steals annually, at least early on, But people don't look at that. They don't say, like, oh, he doesn't have, you know, 30 plus homer power, and he doesn't have, he's not a 20-20 guy or whatever it may be. Like, those are the guys that overlooked. Like Bryson Stott, another great example of that. He doesn't have any huge tool. Like he gets on base. He hits for high average. He has 20 plus home runs, 10 plus steals, score a ton of runs. Those are the guys that just don't have the loud tools. But you don't need to have loud tools to get to be a highly valuable fantasy guy. Lindor wasn't the guy that had huge steals. He was more of a thought of as a defensive guy with, you know, decent but not great offensive skills. Look at the career he's had. So look for the guys that produce and have good all-around skill sets, but maybe not have those loud tools. Those are the guys that get undervalued in general.
Yep, 100%.
Moving on here. Oh, where have I lost my spot in the sheet? We already did the O'Neill Cruz question. At what point – here's a good one. At what point do you – and they use give up on a former prospect – former top prospect's upside? Some guys seem to hold crazy dynasty value well past their prospect days just because they were initially rated high as teens. But at what point are they simply the player they're going to be? And a couple of examples this person put in there, Victor Robles, Mitch Keller, Keston Hiura, et cetera. That's a hard question to answer. It's different with everybody because you got to see what they are at the major leagues, what the profile looks like. You know, does the K rate go up? Like, so many factors. So that's a hard question to give like a direct answer to. I don't know. Do you have a great answer for this question, Chris? It's kind of it's a hard question, but it's such a player to player, thing. Like it varies.
Yeah, you have to look at like what they're exhibiting, like why are they struggling? I think that's an important answer, or a thing that you always need to answer is the why. Everybody always quick to say, well, here's what they did, but why did they do that? Like, why did they struggle? And if you can find the why and everything, I think it'll help you better answer that. So like, you know, what caused this prospect to struggle? And if there's a good why as to why you should drop him, then I think that gives a good reason to, quote, give up on him per se. But you look and like, Let's take two players here. So like a Victor Robles, once top prospect, he doesn't have the skill set. Why has he struggled? Well, for one, he doesn't have the power. He's not stealing bases, and he doesn't make enough contact to hit for average. So the why is pretty easy there of why he struggled. And I feel like I can answer that and say, like, he's not exhibiting any skills that makes me think that there's some hope for him. Mitch Keller's shown signs of hope this spring. Hiura's shown signs of hope. Like, we haven't seen that from a Robles type. So, like, when you find the why in that, it helps you to really answer that, I think, a little better.
Great answer. I'll leave it at that. Next question here. How would you project the infields for both the Pirates and Red Sox in 2023? Are Nick York and Nick Gonzalez expected to both stick at second base moving forward? And can we see them in the majors next season? Yes and yes. I think we definitely could. I think long-term it's going to be O'Neill Cruz at short and Gonzalez at second for Pittsburgh. And I think York sticks a second base because you got when he's ready. And I think we talked about this. I think I was saying maybe late 2023. I think, Chris, you were more early 2024, which I'm totally on board with as well. But at that point, Bogarts could opt out. I'd hate that, but he could opt out. You know, he could move Bogarts over. You know, some moving pieces could be moved around. So I'm not worried about, you know, Nick York being blocked yet. We could see York at short, Story at short, Bogey moves over to first or third, Devers goes to first, whatever it may be. I don't know. We'll see. Or maybe Bogey's gone by that point. Could be. So, yeah, I think York could take a second. Same with Gonzalez. And, yeah, I think York's up by the end of 2023 or early 2024 at the latest.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you said. So I think they both stick more 2024 for York. But if he keeps hitting, he couldn't push the timeline up. I think Nick Gonzalez is definitely more ready as a college bat. So excited to see what he can do as well.
Yeah, I like Nick Gonzalez a lot. I think he's going to be a top 10 caliber fantasy second baseman for a long time. That bat is legit, a little bit of speed as well. I think Pittsburgh's going to be a pretty solid lineup here in the next few years. All these young guys they'll be adding. Definitely on the up and up. We had another J-Rod question. A couple other J-Rod questions. One, this is more, you know, team-based for this person, but I think in general they're asking, you know, how good do we think J-Rod can be this year? Assuming he makes the opening day roster, what do we think he looks like this year? I think good average, good power. And I think if I told you, Chris, that, you know, let's say by the over-under, 270 and 25 home runs and like, you know, 7-8 steals. What would you think about that?
No, I think that's definitely fair. I'm not going to suggest he's going to be a superstar year one. He's still right. So young, but he's very polished despite his age. So I think that's pretty reasonable. You don't want to put the expectation too high, but I think he can be a highly fantasy relevant player in his rookie season. I do believe that for a fact.
Agreed. Yeah. I think he's going to be, you've seen that like, he is so advanced. Like he's a 331 career minor league hitter, 412 OBP. Obviously we've seen that, you know, he doesn't strike out much. The power's there. Hit tool is there. He's just very polished. So I think he definitely could be one that hits the ground running and is a top 100 player this year if he gets the time. Like I'm still not 100% that he's on opening day roster. We'll see. We'll get that answer probably within the next few days, I'm sure. But yeah, whenever he is up, if it's opening day, if it's May, if it's June, I think it'll be June at the latest at this point. He's going to be probably pretty damn good right away. All right, next question here. What impact will the Humidors have on fantasy baseball? I'm not 100% sure on this. Well, at least they're doing it league-wide now, which is great. But do you have any thoughts on this, Chris?
I'm just going to go to what Eno said about it because he put it in the best way that I think you could possibly say it. I got to find his tweet. He's basically said the humidor brings the balls to average humidity. So extremely humid places, it'll keep the ball drier and less waterlogged, which means the ball will travel further, which is definitely great. So he said the most humid parks like San Francisco, San Diego, Miami, and Tampa Bay even could see an offensive boost. Basically, you know, rehashing, saying that the humidor does help like just make the ball travel more. So the teams that already had humidors are, let's see, listed those as well. Rockies, Diamondbacks, Red Sox, Mariners, Mets, Astros, Marlins, Cardinals, Rangers, and Blue Jays. So we'll see the other parks, I think, get a boost. So it could hurt Miami pitchers, I think. That's a possibility. San Francisco pitchers, it could hurt. It'll be interesting to see how that really plays out. So I'm looking forward to seeing that, but at least it's everything will be on an even playing field.
Yeah, I like that. I didn't like how that was. It was like, you know, 10 or 12 ballparks you just mentioned. I'm just glad that it's all 30 now. Get universal, same with the DH. I like everything universal, even playing field. So I think that's good. All right. Which prospect has the best MLB stats this year, and what is their stat line? I mean, it's easy to say Bobby Witt Jr. Yeah. Because day one, he said the power, the speed. He's looked really damn good so far this spring. He's got a couple of home runs already. Isn't striking out that much. I think he's actually 2 walks to 2 Ks, which is really encouraging. So, yeah, easy answer here. I'd hate to be boring and go Bobby Witt Jr., but I think it is. And I think it's something like 265, 270. I think you'll see mid-20s home runs and 15, 16 steals. And that's super lofty, and that'll make him a top. If he goes like even 260, 25, 15, I think that's a top 60, 50 player right there. So, but I think that's what we could see. He looks really good. He's improved a ton as an overall hitter since the 2019 draft. He's not just a power speed guy anymore. Yeah, so I think that's definitely possible.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think that he's the easy pick to be the best rookie. And I think the stats, I don't think 2020 is out of the question. It depends on where he hits in the lineup and how the Royals let him run. Yep. So I kind of was out on him for most of draft season. And I think that he looms a lot right now in redraft league. So I'm not sure if I'll end up, I mean, I'm done with most drafts at this point, but I do think that he's an easy pick for me to say that he'll be the best rookie or best prospect.
Yeah. I don't think I have any shares of, I obviously dynasty shares and maybe one or two like early best balls, but trying to pull up, you know, like NFBC, you can look at your player shares. And yeah, I have none. I said a quick control F for Witt, and there was no results found. So, yeah, I don't have any Witt shares on any of my NFBC teams. Not because I didn't like Witt, just because the price tag and he's a rookie. And I've been spurned by that before. I'm trying to steer away from it this year more than before. So, but yeah, I think Witt's could have a really good year, obviously. Let's squeeze in a couple more here. We still got like 7 or 8 more. But we can't get to them all here. We don't have like a 2-hour show here. So we'll just do a couple more here. It says, if you could trade to get Wander in a dynasty, but it would cost you either Vlad or Soto, would you? Absolutely not.
No.
we've talked about, Wander's very good. Like, he could be Ozzie Albies with more average, like, you know, but maybe a little less, you know, power speed overall than Albies. But a guy that's, you know, top 15 to 20 draft pick, you know, maybe a little higher. I just don't see him as being an annual top 10 guy. Like, you know, Vlad and Soto are, like, they're top five guys. They've shown that that might be the two highest floors in the game right now, Vlad and Soto. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, there's no chance. And I do think Wander has a high floor too, but I'm not paying that cost to get him.
No, like, if anything, I've sold a couple of Wander shares in Dynasty. So obviously love the player. Just, I think he's a bit overvalued for Dynasty purposes here. Ezekiel Tovar spring training. What do you guys make of it? Seems underrated and underappreciated when comparing him to someone like a Luis Matos. Yeah, we saw Tovar last year out in the Arizona Fall League, and I think we both kind of came away with a similar reaction where he looked good. He's putting the bat on the ball, but we were kind of wondering how much impact was going to be there. You know, how much power was he hit for, or is he much more of a, you know, slap hitter type? So I don't know. I honestly haven't even looked at Tovar's spring training stats before now. I'm pulling them up right now. Has he hit for a lot of power this spring?
There's some decent exit velocities. He had a 110.2 EV, which he had 110.4 in the AFL. But you're right, while he has exhibited the ability to hit for, you know, at least high EVs, he still looked like more of a slap hitter that went the other way a lot in every, and we saw him three or four games, I think. So that was something that definitely stood out to us. But if he learns to lift the ball a little more, I could see him getting more home run power because he does make really, really good contact. Yeah. And I think that's important. The contact's there. He's still young. He's shown the ability to hit the ball hard. So those are the type of players that usually can evolve into someone that, you know, grows into home runs. And I think that can certainly be the case here. And so I'm sold on the fact that he's just going to be a slap hitter. I think that we'll potentially see him, you know, take some steps forward. So I do like Tovar. I think he's kind of underrated, and he's one that can move up.
Yeah, his spring has actually been really good. I didn't realize he was doing this well. 9 games, 20 plate appearances, 2 doubles, 3 home runs, 2 steals, hitting .550, 0 walks, and 1 strikeout. So yeah, very good spring. I didn't realize he was doing that well this spring. But yeah, I echo a lot of what Chris said. You know, the contact skills are very good. He did have 15 home runs last year in 469 plate appearances between low A and high A. I think he could be a right around a 15-homer guy. I don't think he's ever be a 20-homer guy, but 15 home runs. He's got solid speed, high-efficiency guy as well on the bases, solid contact skills that will obviously be boosted by Coors Field. So this could be a solid fantasy player here down the road. He's still a couple years away. Yeah, you know, he turned 20 back in August, so he'll play most of this year at age 20, so he's still not going to be up until second half of next year at the earliest, and it's also the Rockies, so this could be, you know, another year after that, but it's definitely a good little player here with Tovar. He could be, you know, they don't really have that lockdown middle infield, like Hampson hasn't worked out. Rogers looks like he could be solid, but we're still kind of waiting to see with him, so you could see Tovar as a starting middle infielder for this team a couple years out. Definitely has that upside. I think that's going to wrap it up here. So we got a couple more questions, but we'll get to those on Twitter. Sorry to everyone that we couldn't get to, but thank you to everyone for submitting all these great questions. There's a lot of fun storylines and spring training as well. But that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at EricCross04. Chris is at RotoClegg, and our show is at Fantrax Toolshed. And check out all of our written work at Fantrax HQ, Fantasy Pros, or over on our Patreon. And join us again next time for more fantasy baseball talk. But until then, everyone take care.
Asbury Methodist Village in Montgomery County takes senior living to the next level, creating extraordinary opportunities for a fulfilling future. Work your brain and body in our new wellness center. Stroll our expansive campus and 17-acre nature preserve. Stay sharp with our resident-run college and find so many new ways to get involved and make a difference for others. Anticipate more from your retirement. Visit AsburyMethodistVillage.org today. Your future's here. Equal opportunity housing provider.